Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Brett Cogburn's Panhandle by Brett Cogburn. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by Tim Getman, Michael Glenn, Joe Brack, Thomas Penny, Christopher Graybill, Elizabeth Jernigan, Terrence Aselford, Mort Shelby, David Coyne, David Harris, Nick DePinto, Tim Carlin, Matthew Bassett, Ken Jackson, Dylan Lynch, Michael John Casey, Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, Tim Pabone, Richard Rowan, Justin Wirtz, Nanette Savard, and Margie Tomprose. Reynolds Ranch, Higgins, Texas, 1936.
It's a damn shame, but the Texas I knew is just about gone. Soon there won't be even a hint left of those days, other than the prattling of old-timers with wandering minds and stooped backs and their roomy eyes twinkling with yesteryear. There are folks who call me a pioneer, whatever that means. Those who say that are newspaper writers and such. Nowadays, most mornings I wake up feeling older than Methuselah. I can't ride a horse anymore, but I still saddle mine up every morning and tie him in my yard fence like I got somewhere to go. I still tug on my boots, even though my aching knees creak and protest, and I'd feel naked without a good hat on my head, even if I don't make it any farther than the spun-scarred rocking chair under the shade of my front porch. I'm just old, whether I like it or not, but my story is that of a young man in his prime, wild and hard to handle, and yet to learn that life charges a price for every pleasure. I still don't claim to be much wiser than I ever was, but I do know one thing for sure. Two cowboys getting hold of a racehorse is like giving matches to children. You throw a pretty woman into the mix, somebody's bound to get burned. Looking back down the long years, that isn't exactly how it was. The horse was just an excuse for an adventure. And the woman, well, she had everything to do with our troubles. But, hell, I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyone who feels sorry for an Indian had never been shot at by one. We ran our horses breakneck across the prairie, with old Cheyenne shooting at us every step of the way. Some 400 yards behind me was a whole passel of those savages. Occasions like that when led a man to thinking about the ramifications of his actions and the pattern of his life. Yeah, right about then I was thoroughly disgusted with my life in general and was promising myself to reform from all my bad habits. To the north, an immense black wall of clouds spread across the horizon, silhouetting the buttes and canyons of the Canadian River. They should have made doctors out of the Indians, considering how they like to remove things from the human body. They would cut off and cut up things that most folks just naturally take for granted. And I was determined that they were gonna catch me. They were gonna have to run one hell of a race, cause I was fond of all my part.
Where in the hell is Billy Chet?
Life has taught me that there's no such thing as easy money. Right then I cursed myself for the stupidity of letting him talk me into such a predicament. Well, it sounded easy enough, Just round up a few Cheyenne ponies one evening and slip them off in the night as easy as you please. Rain started to fall and one of the horses before me stumbled and fell. I reined away from the crashing animal, barely missing going over the top of him. Most of the Cheyennes had fallen back some, but one of them, better mounted, had closed to within 70 yards of me. I drew my pistol. I looked down the long barrel of my Colt at the Cheyenne brave bobbing in and out of my sights, and I slowly tightened my finger on the trigger. But before I could even shoot, the Cheyenne's horse lost its footing and cartwheeled end over end. That Cheyenne buck sailed through the air with his arms outstretched, his back arched, and his eyes as big as saucers. I swear, he bounced at least three times when he finally hit the ground. He was a rolling ball of dust with an arm and a leg sticking out here and there. Well, most of the starch was knocked out of him when he rolled to his feet. He didn't look so scary anymore. His rifle was gone, his body was covered in dust. His hair reminded me of a mad porcupine. Struggling in a circle, he tried to remember which end was up. I raised my pistol barrel to my hat brim in a mock salute. He threw up one hand, the middle finger upraised. Didn't take any Buffalo Bill to read that sign.
Where in the hell did a savage learn that?
Then I turned to look ahead of me, and I had one instant of awful recognition as the herd plumb out vanished, and then my horse was sailing over the edge of a high-cut bank. My heart rose up in my throat as I prepared to meet the impact rising up to meet me. We landed in a shower of rock and sand, and when I say it jarred me to the teeth, I'm not exaggerating one bit. That was at least a 12-foot drop, but like many of those range ponies, mine was tougher than nails. I scanned the hill above me where the plane fell off into the deep breaks of the river bottom. The Cheyenne there jerked his horse up hard just as someone fired a shot at him. Another shot stung him with dirt, and that brave tucked his tail and fled back over the rise and out of sight. Then the bobby dropped out of the bucket. That rain fell in an almost impossible sheet of water. The herd turned toward the river at a wide, flat spread of sand, and I could just make out somebody riding at the lead. I ran my horse by the mouth of a small canyon where a man was standing there on its lip. He shot back the way we had come, and I thought that was Billy. The horses ahead of us hit that shallow crossing at a dead run. Then the herd was coming out on the far bank where they turned west and raced along the river. When we hit the river, my horse bogged up to my stirrup. Somehow, he lunged free and hit the center of the river channel, where the footing was firm. When we made the opposite bank, I tried to find Billy behind me, but I couldn't see anything for the storm. I walked my horse blindly up and out of the canyons, hoping I was following, and not at all sure that I hadn't lost the trail.
Where in the hell is Billy?
Well, like the devil, you mention his name and he pops right up. I stopped in the middle of a gully leading up to a long rise. The dark shape of a horseman sat crossways on the trail above. It was Billy, and if I looked as bad right then as he did, I was one sorry sight. He looked like a wet hen just about to run all over the place. Yeah, many years later, I saw a book about Billy with a picture on the cover showing a masked man with a smoking pistol in one hand and a pretty woman in the other. He sure made it look wonderful. In the spring of 1881, sitting on a horse with a cold rain running down the crack of my ass, 50 stolen ponies lost in the night somewhere before me, and a pack of mad Cheyennes somewhere behind me. I pondered on those types of romantic notions. I rode up to Billy, and he was smiling, if you can believe that. He was grinning like a possum, and there wasn't any pretty woman to be had, nor any gun to be found that would smoke on a night like that. I thought about shooting him.
Reckon the rain will wipe out our tracks?
Billy looked over his shoulder back down the canyon.
I just wonder if Noel will have room on the boat for a bunch of Cheyenne nags and a couple of sinners.
Yeah, the trick will be loading those wild devils two by two when he comes paddling by.
Won't be any job at all for good cowboys.
You reckon Andy's still in front of him?
Oh, he's living it up right now if he ain't dead. That boy doesn't seem to know if a body can break their damn fool neck running a horse in this. Coming down off the lip of that canyon back there so rough I didn't know if this nag was bucking or falling with me.
Billy shook his head as if he really gave a lick about personal safety.
Well, let's hope he checks him this side of Kansas. That boy rides like a drunken Injun.
Oh, don't worry. His horse is bound to fall over dead for too long. Yeah!
We caught up with the horses about 4 miles up from where they were scattered out along the banks of a good-sized creek. Andy wasn't to be found.
I'd hope to bed down in Texas tonight.
That little grove of trees yonder looks accommodating enough until that creek slows down.
No, I guess these ponies ain't going anywhere tonight. Well, maybe Andy'll show up.
Billy stepped down under the trees and began unsaddling his horse, and I did as well. I pitched my roll on the highest, driest spot I could find, one with only 3 inches of standing water, and I flopped down.
Oh, riding with you is like riding with my mother.
Go to sleep. Rain's slacking off.
Yeah, it's falling straight down now, and not sideways like before.
Reckon Andy's all right.
Oh, hell if I know.
Andy showed up the next morning, and I guess you could say he's all right. He was caked with mud from head to toe, his hat was missing, and he was gamely half carrying and half dragging his saddle along in his wake.
I was hoping you boys had some coffee on.
Oh, we was just fixing to chop up the ark and burn it when you walked up.
Fine horse you got there.
I pointed at Andy's feet.
He quit me.
They seem to do that to you.
The son of a bitch stopped in his tracks and sold up. I couldn't move him for anything. He finally fell over on his side, and I tried almost everything to get him going again. I'd like to have never dug my saddle out from under him.
Oh, he might get back up and come trailing in later.
No, he won't.
Now, I admit you know something about windbroke, rode down, sold up horses, but you could be wrong.
No, I ain't.
How's that?
I shot him.
You sure ain't a lover of animals, Andy.
Andy Custer might have been about 16, although he claimed to be older. He was just short of 6 feet tall, and he was real thin. He's blonde and fair as white linen. He wore a thin mustache and a goatee that he claimed to have patterned after a picture of General Custer he saw once. Andy fancied himself a sure enough desperado. You didn't have to ask him because he would tell you without your asking that he was one bad man. He had a habit of always pulling out his pistol, playing with it when he was sitting around. Billy and I wondered which he played with more, his gun or his pecker. Now, Billy was as opposite from Andy as could be. He had a way of looking good no matter what. Even in his rain-soaked rags, he somehow stood out over us. He always seemed to find a way to spruce himself up a mite. I don't know when or where he did it, but he did. As some men just have a way about them, Billy Champion had that way. did everything bigger, faster, wilder than anyone I ever ran across. I guess that's why I followed him down from the D Cross in the spring of 81. I've heard men say that he was a man's man, whatever that is. I know horses and women liked him to uncommon extremes, and he liked them with equal enthusiasm. Billy was cold black-headed and a little on the dark side. I always figured he had some Indian in him, but he'd have shot me had I said so. On the worst morning, I never saw him go unshaved, and that morning was no exception. Billy was always an early riser. When I sat rubbing the sleep out of my eyes and studying Andy, Billy is already done with his morning pruning. Billy wasn't a big man. He might have been 5'9 or so and didn't weigh more than 150 crossing a river with his boots on. But when Billy was on the prod, oh, happy for that matter, he seemed big as life. He was always smiling and flashing those pearly white teeth. One look at him and you knew it was all fun and damn the consequences.
Fellas, that's Commission Creek. She heads up not too far from here. We should be able to cross as she's falling fast and pretty narrow and shallow on up there.
My horse might not be able to carry this wet bedroll.
That sore-footed driblet might not carry you out of camp.
What the hell is a driblet?
You know, a driblet.
No, I don't know what a driblet is. I think you're making it up.
Billy walked a wide semicircle around my horse, making a big show of judging its quality.
Yep, that's what I thought. Fits the bill, that's a driblet. It ain't quite spit, and it ain't quite drool. It's a driblet.
You beat all, Billy.
Maybe the sun will pop out later and we can stop and dry our gear. I'll go bring up the horses if I can and catch Horse Killer here a mount.
Catch me a good one, Nate.
Like there was a good one in the bunch. It was a pretty sorry-looking herd of horses, and only three outlaw cowboys would be stupid enough to risk life and limb stealing. The horses weren't scattered too far at all because they were mostly gutted and wore out. I roped a little bay that looked in better flesh than most of the others, and I brought him back to Andy, and we started making our way. We started the ponies up the creek. They were moving slowly without any travel in them.
My head don't feel right. I wish I had my ass.
I wish you had a lick of sense.
Whoa! He don't act sociable, do he? I don't think this boy's been ripped before. How am I supposed to herd horses?
Keep his nose pointed the way you want to go. Kick when you need to move, and pull when you want to stop.
I hear you.
I'd never done anything but cowboy since I was big enough to count for anything. Seemed like that was a hand's job in those days. Billy put a lead on the herd, and Andy and I brought him along, pushing up on the drag until we broke him into a good long trot. Oh, we were quite the sight, all of us on green and unbroken horses. Andy's horse continued to pitch, and Billy's paint shied at everything from Billy to a clump of grass that didn't look right. And hell, I even saw it fart in the spook itself.
Whoa, what the hell is wrong with you?
We made our way across the prairie and rounded a little rock pile. Government survey marker that was a Texas line. Crossing that little line must have meant a lot to those boys. The country in front of us looked just the same to me as what we'd left behind, but, well, then again, I wasn't from Texas. You would have thought those two were born in heaven and had just come home after 50 years in hell. Maybe we all carry a touch of the old home with us, packed away in its own little cubbyhole. They say home is where the heart is, but I was a restless traveling sort of man. I'll always remember home not as a quaint picture of the place where I was born, but as a feeling. It was a rhythm of one hoof after another cutting prairie grass. Swinging west of the little stage station, our stomachs be damned, we lined out north across the rolling short grass country, scattered with gyp rock canyons here and there. About noon, we topped a hill and we could see a long, flat descent down to a little creek cutting across our way. A small trickle of smoke drifted up from a camp below. I could make out what looked to be a cart with a couple of horses tied alongside.
What you think?
My stomach thinks my throat's been cut.
Well, we headed on down to the creek, camp still 100 yards off. Sawed-off bearded man with a Muley Sharp's rifle in his hand came out to lean against the wheel of his cart. Leaving the herd to scatter on the grass, three of us rode up and stopped about 10 yards out from the fire.
Howdy!
Hi!
Hey, we're driving north to Kansas. They're all but out of grub. We was wondering if you might have a bit to spare.
I might. Light and set.
After we got settled, the man gave us a ration of beans and bacon that he'd been cooking. I slowed down long enough between bites on my second plate to study the wizened fella across the fire from us. He sat Indian fashion on the ground with that sharp nestled across his thighs. He was extremely short, with a little old slouchy hat that hung down almost to the bridge of his nose. His gray beard draped right over his pot belly. He might have been 60, but his little round eyes were bright and sharp.
You boys taking those horses to Dodge?
Oh, well, probably. Or wherever we can find a buyer. Now, I'm Billy Champion. This gent here to my right is Nate Reynolds, and that skinny galoot to my left is Andy.
Andy Custer!
Yeah, if you got a bit to spare, we could use a little grub to get us on through. We ain't got much hard money, but maybe we could deal you out of a bit of salt and beans.
I heard of you. You're the man who backed John Jay down. You know you're on his range right now.
Billy ignored the question. Everyone in southwest Kansas, the western half of the Indian Territory, and probably back down the trail south into old Texas, knew about Billy's run-in with Jay. Jay's outfit took in a big chunk of country, and he's running a lot of cattle. Billy had brought a herd up from South Texas a year ago and delivered it to Jay's headquarters in Kansas. That's how Billy and I met. I worked under him on that drive. Billy and Jay disagreed on the delivery count. Things, they got a little heated. Like a lot of self-made men, John Jay thought a lot of himself, and he was used to running roughshod over lesser men. He cussed Billy for losing too many steers on the trail, and he cussed about their condition, and he generally let Billy know what he thought about his poor abilities in regard to managing a trail herd. The recount on a hot day had clipped everybody's fuses pretty short. Before Jay had gotten good and wound up, Billy put his hand on his colt and told him they could settle things between them real quick if he had the guts. Jay backed down in front of our crew and his. He paid up according to Billy's count. And the taste of humble pie didn't sit too good with either he or his hand. I was just damn glad it didn't end up in a killing that day. Probably would have gotten both crews into it.
A lot of trouble driving horses.
What trouble?
The market can be doubtful, and it can take time to find a buyer.
Well, that's a good set of horses, and we got time.
It'll be tough to sell them in their winter clothes.
The grass is greening. They're putting on weight as we speak. Now, they'll be fat and summer slick in a couple of weeks.
It's hard to see them from here.
Well, I don't guess I'd mind showing them to you.
Never one to pass on a chance to nap and is sprawled out in the grass. Me, well, I took the opportunity to study that particular little layout. The cart was not of the Mexican kind, but rather a spoke-wheel job with a single seat top on the bed. A one-eyed brown mule stood hip-shot alongside it. I watched Billy and Whiskers in the distance. They were drifting lazily through the grazing horses, stopping to study this one and that one from time to time. After what must have been half an hour, I decided to join the fun.
To put Driblet through his paces so this man can see if I told him correct.
Paces?
Billy sat there smugly with a twinkle in his eye. Like he expected me to have something to show him. I pedaled him up to a lope and managed to ride him in a big circle to the left. I pulled him down slowly to what you might call a stop and made an attempt to roll him back the other way and loped a couple of circles to the right. Then I headed on back to the horse trainers. Not aiming directly at them, as I wasn't sure I could stop short enough from crashing into their midst.
Stops hard, don't he?
Well, like I told you, he can turn around like a cat in a stovepipe, stop on a dime, and get back like a bad check.
Smooth, ain't he?
I'd say so.
See there? And he's pretty to boot. Now look him over some more.
Billy left Whiskers and came up to me for a private discussion.
You know, we might get $10 to $12 a head for those horses in Kansas if we find a buyer. And those soldiers down south may have got word we stole them and wired the news north. It's happened before. If we could make a good trade here, it'd be better than going to some farmer's calaboose over a bunch of $10 Cheyenne ponies.
What's the trade?
$5 a head. Then we take the cut with us or throw them in.
Cash money?
Well, that's a lot of hard money. Let's see, 50 head minus one. That's got a knockdown hip, one with an eye put out, and five that a coyote wouldn't eat. Let's say 10 head of cuts. That's 40 head at $5 and...
200.
Yeah, 200. How's that sound?
Hard money?
Well,
how much hard money?
65 cash, that Sharp's gun, 50 rounds of friction for it, and that little sack of vittles.
Mm-hmm. Who gets the gun?
You can have my old Winchester.
What about Andy?
I've got an old converted Colt Navy in my bedroll that he's been wanting. I'll give it to him so we all get a new shooting iron. And we'll split the cash three ways.
That old Navy ain't worth $10.
Once I tell Andy that Wild Bill Hickok favored Navy Colts, he'll think he's getting a hell of a deal. He'll probably become a two-gun badass himself. Besides, the boy's got to pay something for the education we've been giving him.
That'll work.
I just think, partner, we can drift down to Mobile and have a sure enough good time with that money. You could have my saddle horse.
What are you going to ride?
Oh, I'm keeping the paint.
Uh-huh. Who's gonna help Whiskers drive that bunch?
Oh, that feller looking over the creek bank, pointing a shotgun at us?
What?
Sure enough, after he pointed out the direction, I could make out somebody looking at us over a cutbank in the creek. He'd been there all along, not 90 feet from us when we were at the fire. That would have made most folks nervous.
Old Whiskers ain't too trusting.
Oh, by the way, Whiskers' name is Harvey.
Yeah, I'll calm some other things once we get out of here. I don't like anybody pointing a gun at me. Especially when I don't know they're there. Let's get them back to camp.
We went back to Harvey Whiskers' camp. Billy was smiling like somebody holding a gun on him was the funniest thing in the world.
I think I might keep that sorrel there for my own personal horse.
Yeah, I'll bet you'll love him. Hey, Andy.
Andy was sound asleep, lost to the world.
Get up, Andy!
Huh?
About time to go.
Billy handed me his Winchester and shoved the sharps in his own saddle boot. I took a latigo string from a bunch I carried on my back D and tied it to a saddle ring on the carbine. As soon as I'd hung it on my saddle horn, Harvey walked up and paid us the currency. Billy held the coins out in his palm to eye them appreciatively. And reaching down, I snatched the $20 gold piece and a few dollars more from the little pile in his hand and pocketed them.
Hey, we gotta divide it evenly.
If you were an educated man, you'd call that an eyeball cut.
I'd say that wasn't much of an accurate split.
I'd say you better call in that man you got out yonder. I'm tired of my back feeling too wide.
Harvey didn't argue any, and he waved his man on in. Big black fella came walking up from the creek with a long-barreled shotgun cradled in one huge elbow. That man was a giant, and he must have stood halfway past 6 feet. One of his legs was as big around as my chest. He wore a big-brimmed straw sombrero, a rough-cut calico cloth shirt, and a pair of patched overalls that ended about three-quarters the way down his calves.
You want me to hitch up the mare, Mr. Harvey?
Where the hell did the nigger come from?
Let's go.
Billy reached up and tucked some of the money into Andy's vest pocket.
Has he been holding a shotgun on us this whole time?
Let's go, Andy.
He don't scare me none.
That black man's face might as well have been chiseled from stone. But I noticed his thumb ease up onto the hammer of his scattergun.
Let's go!
Was there enough grub in that sack to suit you?
It'll do.
We took our sweet time riding away from the camp as if there wasn't a gun at all backs. I turned in the saddle for one more look back. Harvey had gone to saddling the saw we had sold him. That black man stood in the same spot like he was rooted there. He appeared determined to watch us until we were out of sight. We continued riding, and I could tell by Billy's face that he had something to say on the matter, but he remained silent. It was then I looked out across the prairie. 2 miles off, I could see a long plume of dust worming its way towards Harvey's camp.
You two, look yonder. I think that's those Cheyenne fogging it up our trail.
I didn't wait for a response. I just stuck the spurs to Dunny and headed west. Stopped just along the edge of a big canyon, looking back the way we'd come. There were no gunshots.
I wonder what that nigger thinks about a bunch of mad Cheyenne.
I hope that old man is a talker.
I hope they give him a chance to talk.
He was a crafty sort, and if he does squirm his way out, those Cheyenne can read signs.
You always look at the bright side, Nate.
I'm still kicking. I intend to be tomorrow.
I made sure to keep my eye on our back trail as we circle south.
I'm too busy having fun to worry. We'll have a time in Mobiti come tomorrow, won't we, boys?
Hell yes. Let's ride. There's whiskey, gambling, and a good-hearted whore waiting on me.
There are moments when the world seems to sleep and time passes with absolute perfection. Those times are fragile and ought to be observed in stillness. The day after our horse trade, we camped in a draw south of the Canadian River. It was a quiet place with a small cottonwood and hackberry grove shading a little spring that seeped down to the river. We tossed our saddles on a sandy flat at the bottom and picketed our horses close to hand. Each of us lay down, and although it was only late afternoon, we slept like dead men until the next morning. I awoke first, rolling out of my bedding just as the sun was rising. I walked up on out of the draw and looked upon the plains falling away to the south. In that light, in that moment, That world was a different place, and I was small upon the face of it. You can't capture moments like that in memory, much less describe them with accuracy to anyone else. You only recall bits and pieces, and little boxes of perfect perfection that come back to you with the purest clarity, even many years later. I walked back to camp to find Billy and Anda getting out of the bedrolls.
Where you been?
Looking.
Yeah, what?
I don't know for certain.
What?
I was just looking at the horizon. It's a beautiful morning.
Nate, you beat all. I think you're a little addled.
Let up, Andy. He's just educated, that's all. Educated folks have got a different way about him.
Well, I went all the way up to fourth grade. Even if that was off and on a little, you could say I graduated. And I don't talk funny like he does, even after all my schooling.
Well, Nate there is a Kentucky gent. Now, he went to fancy schools and danced at them fancy parties. He slept in a feather bed in a big white house. Whole bit. Didn't you, Nate?
It wasn't quite like that.
Billy did know a little about me, or what I'd let him know. My folks were considered big people back there. Now, they weren't rich, just affluent in their own little world. And my parents did see to it that I had a fair education for the time. After my stint in a little country schoolhouse, I spent 2 years at a college in Virginia. Returning home, I was given a small stake, my inheritance, and a merry send-off to get me started on my course in life. My oldest brother got the farm, as was his right, and my sisters could marry their way to fortune, and knowing them, they would. Me? I lit out for the west to see the sights, and I hadn't stayed in one place too long since. I made my way to Texas and hooked up with a trail herd of horses heading to San Antonio. I went with a blocker herd of steers north to the railroad at Wichita. From there, I made my way into Nebraska following another herd, and soon drifted into Colorado, where I spent 2 years on a ranch there. Most of my work was taking delivery of Texas herds and driving them one bunch at a time for sales to the miners in the mountains west of there. Now, I had eventually made my way back south and wintered in the Cherokee Strip, riding the grub line from camp to keep from starving. I met Billy there, and I went with him that spring on the long drive from deep in South Texas to deliver Jay's trail herd. Now, basically, I spent years in the saddle learning a trade. And in that time, I learned how those conquistadors must have felt when they came riding across that country astride those fine bob horses with lances in their hands and their eyes hungry for gold. The elevated feeling of the caballero, the gentleman on horseback, made even the smallest man look down on those who were lowly enough to walk on their own two legs. Now, I was no gentleman, but I'd be damned if I'd ever do anything again that couldn't be done from the back of a horse. I remember my grandpappy never drank but one kind of liquor. I asked him once why he didn't ever try anything else. He told me he couldn't imagine liking anything better than what he already drank, and I guess I was like that too. I'd found what suited me, and I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Oh, my stomach's rubbing my backbone raw.
Andy grabbed at the grub sack. I felt the same way, but didn't say so. He could do the cooking himself.
You worry about them, Cheyenne?
After a week in Mobidi, I might not worry about them anymore.
If I didn't know you better, I'd say you were scared of those reservation warriors.
Yeah, you got the engine fighter's name. Why don't you go get us some chips? These damn cottonwood limbs are green and will hardly burn at all.
All right.
Andrew dumped our groceries on the ground and took off from camp carrying the sack. He was back before too long with an impressive pile of cow patties.
How far do you have to go to find a dry one?
Wind's already dried most of them out.
Keep the fire small so it doesn't smoke too much.
Studiously ignoring me, Andy fed the fire like he was stoking the boiler on a highball train.
I need a hot fire to cook on. And anyhow, Nate, I figure it's a question of bravery. Does it take a braver man to face scalping or a slow death from starvation?
Hell, I'm hungry myself. I saw a chunk of side meat in that sack.
We were cleaning up the last of the bacon and sipping coffee boiled in a fruit can when Andy jumped to his feet.
Oh, looky there, what comes?
We all looked back down the draw and watched that big black man coming up to us. He was riding the sorrel we traded Harvey, and that shotgun was still in his arm.
Got a bike to spare?
Sure. Step on down and join us.
I figured Andy was gonna make trouble. He wasn't necessarily a hothead, but I think he was bound to show Billy how tough he was. Despite that, he continued to stand there for a bit, looking awkward and unsure.
All we have left is coffee.
That'll do.
He reached inside his shirt and pulled out a battered tin cup.
That was a good trick you boys pulled.
We thought so.
My name's Tom Freeman.
What about Harvey?
Those Indians want us quick. Harvey lit out for the plum thicket along the creek. Me, I rolled under the cart and they just went on by. They spotted Harvey and were hot and heavy after him. While they were hooting and hollering and searching the thicket, I jumped on the sorrel and lit out before they took the time to notice there were two of them.
You probably led those Indians right to us.
I didn't know that old crook anything, so I left him. Those Indians didn't get him. The Lord will someday. You boys don't know what an old he-coon you pulled that stunt on.
No, we just sold him some horses.
You didn't make out so bad yourself.
That man owed me more than that horse yonder.
What'd he owe you?
15 gallons of whiskey.
Where the hell did you get that much whiskey?
I made it.
Is that what you did where you come from?
I made the best whiskey in the nation, and that's saying a lot.
Well, reckon that's sure some recommendation in your line of work. Is that where you hail from?
Yeah, down in Choctaw country. Had me a good operation there. Had some land and a Choctaw woman.
And Parker's boys run you out?
Nah, I just got tired of their stealing. Confiscation, they called it. They never arrested me, just got so they'd steal my whole batch.
Seems like you might have made some good whiskey if they thought so highly of it.
I made some.
What about your woman?
She was worse than those deputies. I might have shot me a few of those old boys, but that woman was something else. Me and her squared off one day, me with this shotgun and her with a cast iron skillet. Touch and go for a moment. I decided it was too chancy of a thing to try her. I left the country.
Now, if you had a bottle of your whiskey, we could take a measure of it.
Yeah?
Well, you claim to be an expert in the field of whiskey making, and we claim to be equally skilled in whiskey tasting.
Seems like almost everybody claims to be a sampler.
Billy jabbed his thumb my way.
Yeah, but most folks don't have a Tennessee boy in the midst. This long-legged Jasper here is a bona fide Tennessee gentleman, and he claims that there ain't any whiskey except Tennessee whiskey.
Known a few of you boys in my time. Don't know nothing but coon hounds sipping whiskey and fighting.
Freeman rose and headed for his horse, returning shortly with a bottle of whiskey. He pitched it to me.
Let the expert begin.
I ain't from Tennessee. I'm from Kentucky.
Freeman didn't seem to hear me. Billy wasn't about to let me disqualify myself.
Let's drink.
I pulled the cork on the bottle and held it up before my eyes. That whiskey was as clear as spring water.
Now, I imported him in just for these occasions.
Woo-wee!
That was the smoothest whiskey I ever drank.
Damn!
And man, what a jolt it passed.
That is good. Smooth as a baby's butt and kicks like a Missouri mule.
I'll be the judge of that.
And his arm sneaked out and grabbed the bottle from me.
Oh, yeah!
Andy passed the bottle to Billy, and he took a pull at it.
You are an artist, Tom.
Billy pitched the bottle back to Freeman. Wrapping one of his huge paws around that bottle, Freeman held it before him like a preacher holding up the Bible before his congregation.
Here's to the friendships made and lost, the women married and left, and the money won and thrown away by men drinking good corn liquor.
Well, 2 hours later, everyone had taken the full measure of Freeman corn liquor. Even Andy was warming up to the talented newcomer.
You kin to General Custer, that Indian fighter?
Yep.
He made quite a name of himself.
I reckon he'd have whipped almost every bunch of Indians from here to Canada by now if he lived.
Wasn't it Indians that killed him?
Andy just sat there with a dumb look on his face.
I got a piss.
This triggered an impromptu migration from the fire. We strolled down to the little stream that ran down the draw.
Well, I'll flood them Cheyenne villages downstream.
Only a heathen would piss in the creek.
Billy joined Andy. In a moment, the four of us stood watching yellow streams of urine trickling off down the current.
Woo! Looky there! That's 190 proof Kentucky sipping whiskey. It's corn yellow, aged in my gut, and made in a clear spring.
Andy rocked back dangerously on his heels, shaking his pecker.
Take a good look, boys. I weighed 13 pounds when I was born, until they circumcised me.
Looks like a grub worm with the guts slung out of it.
Put that little old nubbin away.
Freeman swung that pecker back and forth over the water, splattering piss at our feet.
Would you look at that?
Andy pointed at Freeman's cock, which stuck out the side of the bib of his overalls. That damn thing was so long, he didn't even have to bother with unbuttoning his fly. He just pulled it out the side.
You better put that thing up, boy, before Andy falls in love with you.
I ain't your boy.
As we walked on back, Freeman's bloodshot eyes stared at Billy belligerently. He pulled out a tattered, thin little book from his hip pocket and held it in his palm before us.
What's that?
Carpetbagger gave it to me when I was a boy. It's a book about the U.S. Constitution and such.
Did you learn to make whiskey from that book?
We were all created equal. Country fought a war over it.
No, Tom. You seem like a nice enough fella. But some mean old Texan is gonna crack your head if you ain't careful where you pitch that sassy talk.
It's a free country.
Yeah. You're too damn big to argue with. Short of shooting you. If you tell me that you're white, I believe you.
I ain't ashamed of the color of my skin, and I'll be as sassy as I please.
Tom, I am coming to believe that you got more than a little fight in you. What about you, Nate? Got anything against this colored fella?
No.
See there, Nate's a good Tennessee boy. You already convinced him.
Kentucky.
Freeman turned his back on us and went to check his horse. Somehow, I got the notion he was as stubborn as Billy was. Surprisingly enough, Andy followed Freeman, mocking a two-holed hand on a gigantic tool at his crotch.
I think I'll call you Biggin.
I've already got a name.
Billy settled the matter.
Long time, Freeman.
Long time.
Hey, long time and General Custer riding to glory.
Hey, are you coming to Mobidi with us, long time?
If I smart enough to follow you, Mr. Billy.
Just that easy. Billy adopted one time Freeman, despite the fact that he'd been ready to shoot him the day before. Once we'd all saddled our horses, Billy stepped aboard his and tipped the last of the whiskey down his throat. He tossed the bottle high and Andy jerked his pistol out. That bottle busted when it hit the ground.
Are you ever gonna hit one?
Andy jammed the shooter back in his holster and we mounted up.
Get on, General Custer.
All right. Long Tom!
Andy swung into his saddle without touching his stirrup. That boy should have been a circus rider. He ended up sitting backwards.
Turn around, you drunken heathen.
Well, I'll be damned. There for a moment, I thought somebody had cut my horse's head plumb off.
Billy spurred off in a shower of dust. Andy grabbed a handful of tail and Billy punched his horse with both feet. We all hit a lope for Moby Beatty like some mad parade with Billy in the lead. Freeman bounced along beside me, hugging at a canvas sack which hung from a saddle horn in order to keep it from flopping. It must have held the last of his whiskey.
Come on, Billy! Come on! Long Tom!
Come on, Tennessee!
I'm from Kentucky!
Moby Beatty didn't need us to look like the suckers had come to town. It was Saturday night and that town was burning wild. We just helped fan the flames a little. We came running four breaths down the street. We pulled up in front of the first saloon as wild-eyed as a horse's. A small crowd stood under the awning in front, shadows in the lamplight there. Andy plunged his horse into their midst, attempting to make it into the saloon. But that door wasn't wide enough, and he only succeeded in scattering a few people and knocking askew one porch pole.
Damn! I thought for sure that would have worked better.
Well, despite our wild entrance, not a soul seemed to give us due attention, because we were nothing out of the ordinary there. It was early spring, and apparently, the boys were gathering for one last celebration before spring works. At least 30 cowponies were tied up and down the street, standing three-legged beneath the saddle. As I slipped the cinch on Dunny, I noticed Long Tom hadn't dismounted. He was still clutching his sack of whiskey.
Hide your whiskey, hitch up your britches, and come on!
Tom pondered me like an owl eyeing a field mouse below him. Slowly, he turned his horse away and headed down the muddy street.
Where you headed?
You got a lot to learn, Tennessee.
I'm from Kentucky.
I know you.
Long Tom disappeared into the night. Billy and Andy had already disappeared into the saloon. I wondered where Long Tom thought he was going, but I figured he's headed for Ringtown, the joint for colored folks north of town. Maybe he knew somebody there. I shuffled my way into the saloon. I made my way to the bar, sidling myself between two men like a cow shoving its way to the feed trough.
Beer!
I gathered up a beer, turned my back to the bar to take in the room. The man beside me knocked back a shot.
By damn, that's whiskey by any man's standard.
He was a drawn-up little fella, hidden beneath the slouching brim of a large hat. He wore suspenders and farmer's boots with mule ear tugs. He looked like a freighter or such.
That's just awful enough to do the trick.
Well, seems like a painful way to go.
Beats the hell out of stringing wire.
Wire, huh?
Oh, I've been stringing Bob Wire for good night. If it's left up to him, he'll fence off all hell and creation.
To hell with wire.
Can't say as I like it, but it's a living.
That ain't living.
There wasn't a thing he could say to that. He kept making sure of having to look up at me, and I knew what was coming, or at least where the conversation was headed. I stood 6'3" in my sock feet. I wish I could say I was handsome, but that isn't true. My nose was way too long, and my black curly hair was a mop that defied taming. I was a tall, thin, big-jointed man, never seemed to find a shirt with the sleeves long enough. So when I was a boy, my mom had always told me I was all feet and hands. I might not win any beauty contest, but I'd grown into those feet and hands enough to give anybody that didn't like my looks a damn good licking.
You ever get lightheaded up there?
If I pissed on you, would you believe it was raining?
Easy. I was just funning you. My name's Whiskey Pete.
Nate Reynolds.
Glad to know you. Have one on me.
Pete offered me the bottle as a peace offering.
No, thanks. You can burn a lantern with that. Why don't you drink the good stuff?
Well, not enough to it. Oh, that city stuff is sneaky. You drink it, and the next morning you're all sick and pained. I'll drink honest trader whiskey.
Honest how?
Well, it's up front. It pains you just to drink it.
Who's hiring now?
Oh, they're fixing to start the general roundup south of the Canadian this week. Find O.J. Weirin. He's range boss for the Lazy F. He's somewhere in town, and I heard he's needing hands.
Thanks, I got other places to be.
Billy was still missing, but I found Andy standing at the back door of the place. His attention was on something outside. I walked up and peered over his shoulder into the dark.
What are you looking at?
It's a bear.
Oh, yeah. You are shitting. Let me see.
It was pitch black behind that saloon. All I could make out was what looked like a dog cowered up in a trash pile a few feet outside the door.
Damn dog is what it is.
Something came at me out of the dark. Something as big as a bear.
Ah! Oh, oh! Yeah!
I traveled all the way to the middle of the room before I stopped to look back. I didn't like being attacked out of the dark. But I regained my courage at the sight of Andy standing calmly before the door.
What in the Sam hell was that?
I told you, it's a bear.
I walked back up, and Andy stepped aside and permitted me another view out the door. Cautiously, I peered out. Sure enough, there was a small black bear standing at the end of a chain. He didn't look so scary once I could see what he was.
Doesn't that beat all?
Why the hell they got a bear tied up?
I guess to look at.
Somebody ought to shoot him.
I like looking at him. I'd like to own him.
What would you do with a bear?
I'd dress him up in a suit, teach him to smoke cigars, and play poker.
That boy wasn't all there.
Where's Billy?
Last I saw him, he was off with One Jump Kate.
One Jump was one of Mobeady's ladies. Assured that I'd seen the last of Billy for a while, I left Andy standing at the bar and went to find myself a place to lay my head for the night. Town was quiet early that morning, and I went in search of Billy. Kate didn't operate out of one of the picket shacks like the crib girls, but had a room in Bill Thompson's dance hall. I went across the floor and into the back where there were several rooms for the girls.
Billy!
Come on in.
Billy was already up and about, looking like he was ready to go to church or something. Kate sat on the bed, her back propped up against the plank wall. What clothes she had on were open at the top, and one tit hung out.
Hello, Nate.
Damn, you're a nasty slut. Ugh.
Billy pitched a wad of clothes her way.
Well, you keep coming around.
Kate was kind of pretty. In fact, she was real pretty compared to most of the girls we had to choose from. She's freckle-faced, true, and wormy, but she had blue eyes with the most mischievous twinkle to them you ever saw in your life. And like Billy, she had a way about her. She wasn't bad as the girls went, and we weren't hypocrite enough to think we were any better. Many were the time when she loaned one of the boys enough to get through the winter. Well, Billy and I left the dance hall and went down the street to old Laughlin's to have a bite to eat. While we ate, I suggested that when we finished up, we go looking for Weir.
I ran into him last night at the Lady Gay.
Did he need help?
Oh, there ain't any shortage of jobs for good cowboys in this country. Especially with every English lord and his brother driving cattle in here. You saw how many cattle have drifted down this way? The winter was a bad one. I saw brands on the way down here from Plum up in Colorado and Nebraska. Now, like I said, there ain't any shortage of work for good cowboys.
How good are we?
Well, I admit you handicapped me some. But as pairs go, we're about as good as it gets.
This is a good country, ain't it?
Just about perfect, I reckon.
We glanced at each other for the merest instant.
Andy.
We headed for the door.